You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast with Jamie and Jason. This is episode 298, and today we are discussing a very important topic. Something that I think will just encourage a lot of you folks, especially followers of Jesus who are just trying to see how their faith plays out in the workplace. So we're going to be talking about Christianity or faith in the marketplace and how the Christian worldview informs our view of work and what that looks like. And we have a special guest joining us, Lucas Cecilio. So thank you for joining us, Lucas.
I'm so excited to be here with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a real honor. You are from Brazil, from, say, Sao Paulo?
Sao Paulo. It's technically a city called Araçatuba, but it's Sao Paulo State. I just say Sao Paulo because it's easier.
Sao Paulo keeps it simple. Okay, cool. Well, I know, so we obviously met at Western Seminary, just like Jamie and I met at Western. And so that's a special connection. But yeah, we're just wanting to hear from you. Tell us a little bit, maybe about your story of how you came to Christ, and then we'll get into the work in the marketplace as well.
And I'm very excited for this conversation. Conversation very dear to my heart. I'm 31 years old. I got married in 2018. Been married for 7 years. We have one daughter. Her name is Amelia. She's 1 year old. My story with Jesus was interesting because, to make a really long story short, everything started because, first of all, my mom couldn't get pregnant. My parents tried for 6 years. They were about to sign up for the Brazilian foster care system to try to adopt somebody, but they felt this call from the Holy Spirit to go to church. Started going to a four-square church in Brazil, and God did a miracle, and he opened my mom's womb, and she got pregnant of me. But then, like, people that, well, they want the blessing, but forget the blesser. My parents got pregnant and stopped going to church. But funny enough, about 6 to 7 years later, the Lord found my mom. My dad was at work. My mom was in the living room. She was cleaning the house. She was listening to a preacher on the radio. Felt convicted, got on her knees in the middle of the house. And later on, she started going to a Baptist church, which my aunt used to go to, invited her. My dad ended up going. I was only 6 years old. I mean, I had no choice, you know.
Yeah, right. You know that is, yeah.
My choice was overwhelmed. And then I went to church with my parents. I was six. But I say that this is the two things that I would say because they are important, and I'll be done with that. When I was 8 years old, there was a conference going on in my parents' church. I was in elementary school, so no kid at 8 years old wants to be in the sanctuary with their parents, you know. So I asked my dad for some cash, go to the church cafe, buy myself a soda, a sandwich, whatever I bought. And there I was, just eating my thing and kind of listening, watching whatever was in the live stream, was the preaching, but I was barely paying attention. But then the pastor did an altar call. Dude, I can't explain, but I felt I should throw my stuff in the garbage can and run to the sanctuary. And that's exactly what happened. So I threw my stuff, ran to church, and that was the moment that the Lord grabbed me, and I was eight. Like, I don't, it was pretty interesting.
Wow.
And then fast forward to, I stayed in church my whole life, but fast forward to beginning of high school, was really wondering, questioning about calling and all of that. 17 years old, and the beginning of my senior year, I felt the Lord speaking to me in a very, very special way, and that's why I moved to the States. That's why I went to Portland Bible College and now Western Seminary, and that's why we do what we do. So,
dude, that's awesome. Yeah, God gets a hold of us in so many different ways, and awesome to hear your story. So all the way from Brazil, and we know that you have a special focus on ministry and leadership.
Yep.
At Western Seminary. And so tell us a little bit about what that looks like, mm-hmm. and then I'll also kick it over to Jamie after that to so you can ask a question as well.
You're asking about my program specifically?
Yeah. What's behind that? Yeah.
Okay. So originally I was talking to you guys before we started recording. Originally I was aiming at applying for the global leadership emphasis. That was the master's I was going for. And then they changed that program, and now there's this ministry and leadership emphasis that for me encompasses well what I feel the Lord put in my heart to do. That is this intersection between ministry and marketplace. Like we at Western, we don't talk about the marketplace per se, but we talk about the kind of leadership that is necessary for a believer in any area of society. I was just at Western today, and Chuck, who is the president of Western, graciously opened his doors, and we had an amazing conversation. And we were talking exactly about that.
Mm.
How the discipleship of a believer is to train a believer to exercise the leadership that the Lord has put in their hearts as a servant of Christ in any domain of civilization.
Mm.
So that was my heart. I love leadership. I believe that every single human being has been called to lead, even if it's to lead their bedroom, you know, even by making sure that everything, that there's no clutter all over the place, even by just organizing a bedroom or cleaning up after themselves, that is this influence they are exercising into alleviating the chaos of the world. So that's the leadership. Mm-hmm. And everybody's called for that in the secular world, in the marketplace, and in church as well. So that's why for the program, I'm finishing my second term. I'm excited to be done probably in 2027. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I love that idea or that focus as well, because like you pointed out, not everybody's called to vocational ministry. And yet at the same time, I think one of the common things that Christians say, or maybe excuses that they use, mm-hmm. is they say, well, you don't really understand. You're a pastor, so you get paid to do this. However, in my workplace, if I live for the Lord and specifically, you know, live for God's good design or God's good purpose, or even share the gospel, then I'm going to lose my job. And I want to start there in terms of this conversation. You know, how do you engage or respond to other brothers and sisters in Christ who offer that objection?
That's a great question. Here is the issue. The issue, I propose that the issue is that most Christians believe that the Christian life is lived in this three-dimensional way. You become a very good person, so it's morality, so you are a good person, and then you go to church, you run through all of the assimilation pipeline, and then you become a leader or a volunteer. If you do that, and then you add the plus of communicating the gospel with people outside, and most people spend 40 hours or more in the workplace working at a company, if you get to preach, it's always that, right? You get to preach, and by preaching, you invite somebody to come to church with you, you are a fantastic Christian.
Mm.
And I think that is so problematic.
Mm.
And a lot of people listening to me might be like, what do you mean that's problematic? I get it. Like, that is the worldview of the church in the West. And I mean, like, I was born, Brazil is a Western country too. Like, that's the worldview that I grew up in. Like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You are a good person, and then you invite a coworker to come to church. Here's the problem. The problem with that is, and we can get to that later, but my response to that objection would be this. We are missing the market completely. The mark is not to go to work and then invite somebody to come to church, but it's to go to work by understanding that the work itself is sacred. And by treating the work as sacred and working differently than anybody, that everybody else in that company will in itself shine a light that will draw, at the very least, curiosity.
Hmm.
And I think that's how Christians should be living. Christians should be the ones creating the best products and the best services in the world. in the world. And that in itself is plenty of light to draw people in. Mm-hmm. And of course, the preaching of the gospel is in doing good, people looking at that, there's no salvation in that, I understand. So it isn't the preaching of the gospel that faith is generated, I get it. But we are missing the mark by thinking that everybody has to go to the workplace and preach. In most cases, you are not going to be able to preach. Mm. But you will be able to be the best product manager that company has ever seen. And that will draw attention. For sure. And that is the job of every believer. Mm. So
just a couple of weeks back, Jamie and I were talking about calling. And, you know, your vocation, God is obviously the one who calls us to a specific work. And he's the one who, because it's him calling, we work ultimately for him. He is the caller. But what I love about, you look at Genesis, and I don't think that there's any other worldview, I don't think there's any sacred text outside the Bible that gives such dignity to work. And even begins, this is what I love about it, Genesis begins by saying God is a God who works. And he loves it.
Yeah.
It's not this dreary task, he's like, I'm tired of work, I'm going to fob this off into my, puny human minions here. He's a God who delights in work. So maybe talk a little bit about how our misconceptions of work itself and our misunderstandings have kind of clouded what work really is about, and help us give us some corrections on that with a Christian worldview.
That's a fantastic question. Here's the thing. I have a question for you guys and for everybody else that's listening to us. You look at the Garden of Eden. Where is the word worship there?
Mm-hmm.
You have the first two chapters, which there's no sin.
Mm-hmm.
For a perfect place, worship should be all over. Right? And of course, we can make a case. Absolutely, it was there. It's implied here and there. But where is worship? So here's the thing. Worship is there. Even the word for worship is there.
Mm.
The word worship is in the first two chapters, if I'm not mistaken, once. But in no translation, that word, that I believe is the word Abida, if I'm saying it correctly in Hebrew, that word is never translated as worship. It's always translated as work. Genesis 2:15.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Genesis 2:15. God created mankind. God placed man in the garden in order to do two things: to work it or to cultivate it. I think the King James translated as to dress it. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
It's almost like there's a blueprint that is ready for something to be built on top of it. It's like this thing that needs human touch, and God made it on purpose. Mm-hmm. It's almost like God created it, if you will, almost like incomplete, with completeness in it to be drawn from. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And then to watch over it, which is a whole other thing. But the idea is, number one, some people have the misconception that work was created in Genesis 3, right?
Yeah.
As a curse. But that's not the work was never the curse. The curse was the thorns, or the curse is the ibuprofen that we have to take for. That's the curse. The curse is not the work. The curse is the difficulty. Because in the perfect world, the materials and how you go about it has no evil limitations that causes pain. The pain is the curse. The work is divine. And by the way, when you look at the garden, and when you look at the garden construct, there is three compartments in the garden, right? Like some people, they think that the Eden and the garden is the same thing, except that's not. You go to Genesis 2, I believe, verse 1, it says that, and a river was flowing out of Eden, from Eden, and watering the garden. So you have Eden as a place, and you have the garden around Eden, and then you have the rest of the world, which is temple language.
Hmm.
It's holy of holies, holy place, and outer quarter. It's tabernacle. It's temple language. Where would the priests be ministering in? They would be ministering in the holy place, between the holy of holies and the outer quarter. Where did God plant Adam and Eve? In the middle, in between, in the holy place, in the garden. Why does that matter? Because God is screaming to all of mankind. The mankind are royal priests. That's the language that he used in Exodus when he was calling the people of Israel, hey, I want you guys to be my royal priests. You guys are kings and queens. And you are called to mirror who I am to creation through what you do. And then you go to Peter, I believe 1 Peter. You are a royal priesthood. You go to Romans 12:1. Our very sacrifice is we present our bodies as a living sacrifice. So the work in Genesis, the way that God intended, is the way which mankind reveals God to the world. So to ignore that portion of our lives entirely is not even to ignore 50% of the work. It might be to ignore pretty close to 100%, if not 100. Because that's how human beings are supposed to go. We demonstrate who God is to the world through the work of our hands. So,
that's good. Yeah, that's good. It kind of makes me think as well of Colossians 3, you know, at the end, verse 17, right? Whatever you do in word or deed, do all for the glory of the Lord.
That's it.
That idea that, you know, okay, so let's say you are in a workplace or a workspace where you can't share the gospel. Of course, I would push back on that concept as well, because I think all that means for us typically is that we're too married to the work we're doing, right? And one of the things I often remind myself as somebody who, yes, I work in ministry, but I also work outside the church as well. And one of the things I remind myself of all the time is I can go work at McDonald's, right? I could go work at a gas station. I can go work, like, I can literally go work anywhere. And so if I lose my job, if I were to lose my job for the sake of the gospel, that's really not a problem. I can go work somewhere else. You know, I don't want to be too married to the comfort, the luxury, that I've become unwilling to share the gospel. But at the same time, like you're pointing out, living for the Lord in your work, is a profound, view of God and ultimately opportunity for the gospel, because you're working differently, right? You're not living, or you're not working to live. You're actually taking great pride and effort to do well and to serve the Lord well. And I think of, you know, my sister worked at this little pizza place when she went to Bible school down in Cannon Beach, Oregon, where they have a little Bible school down there. And the lady who owned that shop said, oh yeah, I love hiring people that go to that Bible school. And she didn't know why she loves hiring them. And it, you know, became an opportunity. Hey, let's talk about the Lord. But she did recognize, and what a cool testimony, that, you know, the people from that school were different employees, were better employees than your run-of-the-mill employee. And that's really the vision of what you're talking about, right? Just this, you should be noticeably different to the point that somebody's going, hey, wait, why are you like this in the workplace?
Yes, exactly. There's a book called The Other Half of Church. I think it's by Jim Wilder. I forgot the name of the author. But the book's called The Other Half of Church. And it's a mix of, if I'm not mistaken, it's a mix of a discipleship pastor and a neurotheologian, which is a cool profession, right? It's like this mix of a neuroscientist with a theologian packed in the same person, you know, packed in the same person. And they both are, they develop this understanding that our discipleship in the Western church is half brain. It's not complete. Why? Because the human brain has two aspects, has two sides. One side is more analogical. The other is more creative. One side is more systematic. So it learns by A, B, C, D, this is knowledge, and that you are taught with words that make sense. But this other side of the brain learns by catching. So it's not what is taught, it's what is caught. And the author brings this example that he goes on this trip with his pastor, which was a mentor of his. And then there was a little confusion that happened at the airport. Some stuff happened with the tickets, so they are talking to the lady at the airline thing. And it's chaotic, he's getting frustrated, and then his wife calls him. It's something like this. The way that he reacted on the phone, it was so different than the way that the person who was watching would react to his wife, because the guy was somehow very calm in the midst of all of that pressure. He didn't pay attention in the moment as much, but later on, that impacted him, and he talks about the necessity for a discipleship that's not just taught in a class, but it's also lived out. So we forget that when we are in the workplace, without saying a word, the way that we live, the way we respond, the jokes that we are not a part of, but we still don't have a judgmental face, the way that we behave, you know, that people know that we are reliable. We go the extra mile. Dude, people don't get it. If Christians were to behave that way, dude, we would be promoted like crazy. Because here's the thing. I'm sorry, but the competition is really low. Most people are pretty mediocre. Like, you go to places, like, I think after COVID, after the pandemic, people lost a lot of their emotional and human interaction and capacity to look on each other's eyes and have a firm handshake and talk properly and in an assertive manner that will guide people properly throughout Home Depot. People lost that so much that if they just act like Christ without saying a word, we will be promoted faster. We will make our place of work better, and people will lean in because they are catching something that we are emanating without saying a word. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, I love that. I think about there's so much joy that can be had in work, and I think this is an aspect that's missed out on so many people, because it's almost like Christians have bought into that narrative of work is a curse and it's a necessary evil. I have to get that paycheck, you know, then I can take care of my family and I can do all these other things with that money. But the work itself is often looked on as this dreary necessity. But you think about people who can't work. I'm telling you travel to, like, nursing homes where people, all they have is leisure time, basically.
Yeah.
And the thing that they most want to do is work.
Yes.
And I think that's just significant that, you know, God, we pay attention to the Sabbath command sometimes. We're not great at that, but the Sabbath command, it's worth keeping this in mind, too, that in that commandment, he says, you shall work for 6 days.
It's not just
make sure you're resting that seventh day. Yes, make sure you're taking Sabbath, but you are to work for 6 days. And so I don't even know if we always think of it as, like, this is from God. This is a mandate. It's a glorious, good, right command, and it's going to uplift us. It's going to give us meaning and purpose in life. Yeah. It's not meant to be this burdensome thing, but it is part of our calling as Christians. We're to work and make a difference. So maybe talk to us a little bit about, for the person who's struggling, because I know this because I've talked to a lot of people personally. A lot of people will say, I do have a job that I see the difference I make, but on the whole, I don't really enjoy it. I don't get along. My boss makes so many bad decisions. When they chalk it up at the end of the day, at least I can come home and rest, but I didn't really enjoy my work. What would you say to somebody who's in that situation where they're not really thriving necessarily, or they're not, in their minds at least, they're not thriving where they're at? What counsel would you give them?
That's great. I read a book one day called Practicing of the Presence of God by somebody that is quoting Brother Lawrence. It's a combination of letters from Brother Lawrence, and it's put together in a book, a tiny little book, highly recommended. And Brother Lawrence was this fascinating guy because He's working at this monastery, and then he's literally working in the kitchen. He's doing the job that nobody wanted to do. He's cleaning stuff, he's cleaning the floor. If I'm not mistaken, he had some type of physical condition too, like something like that. And all the real religious people, all the monks, you know, they are there, they are praying, they are fasting, they are doing their thing, all their spiritual sophisticated stuff. But Brother Lawrence, cleaning the kitchen, was emanating a light and experiencing the kind of stuff that the highest monk could not experience. And he was cleaning the floor. What? I don't want to oversimplify this, but I think there's something about taking pleasure on the Lord himself. And by in doing that, then what we do, like our work, falls into place. Because think about this. Let's say you're listening to us right now, and your job is to clean tables at McDonald's. Dude, I don't know about you guys, but I hate coming to a restaurant, coming to a fast food restaurant even. I don't go to fast food often, but every once in a while, if we are traveling and we stop by on something in the middle of the road, it's disgusting to sit at a table that is just a mess. When somebody has the job of just cleaning that alone, that's a big deal. It doesn't sound like much, but it is. It doesn't sound much when you are cleaning one table. If you multiply that by a million, you have the streets of Portland, Oregon. You know what I'm saying? Like you go. Even cleaning is usually the job that people will be like, ah, I just clean, I'm cleaning toilet. Dude, I don't know about you guys, but I don't like walking into a restroom in a public place that the toilet is a mess. Whoever is cleaning that toilet, oh dude, they do it for the glory of God. They might think that they are not changing civilization in this crazy way, but they are cleaning a toilet. And when that is the thing is, so here's the thing. Genesis 1, verse 1. The beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Verse 2. And the earth was formless and void. The Spirit of God is hovering upon it as the water. This idea, verse 2, is the idea of chaos. It's chaos. And then God says, let there be light, and there is light. In light, there's two things. The capacity for life and for vision. Isn't it interesting that the first work of God is to dissipate chaos? So every work in its every good work has to do with organizing chaos. If you're listening to me right now and you are organizing chaos, no matter the small as cleaning a toilet or as big as changing a piece of legislation for the good of the country, they are both solving chaos. Therefore, they are both divine. And the lack of understanding of that is less about a lack of understanding the work and more about a lack of understanding in the sovereignty of the God that is a God of details. You look at the Old Testament, every little detail is sacred, it's holy, it's separated, it's anointed, it's consecrated for the glory of God. Cleaning a toilet is the holy thing. In fact, I'll give a little testimony in my own life. I remember a time in my life that I was working at a place that I learned a ton, but a lot of what I did, half of my week, was cleaning stuff. And for about a year, I felt, I hated it. I hated it. You know, like, I hated it. I didn't like cleaning toilets every Monday. I didn't like walking around with a vacuum and vacuuming the entire place. I didn't like to be outside throwing garbage. I hate throwing garbage that's, you know, dripping away. I hate that. And I remember the day came that I felt the Lord speaking to me, and I felt like he said, and he reminded me of a verse, I want you to work for them like you are working for me. Dude, my heart started shifting. And I remember the day that I was actually watering plants, the same plants that I've been watering for the past year, at that time. And then I was watering the plants, and my mind was like, oh my Lord, like, isn't it interesting? Like, the word of God is like sold, and then God waters it. And like, I'm making this analogy in my mind, and then I start laughing. I start laughing because I was like, wow, my heart shifted. And you know what happened a few months after that? I got a call and I got another job. And I felt the Lord moving me. Why am I saying this? If you're listening to me right now, you don't like where you work, come to the Lord. Make sure that in your heart the Lord is the main thing. It's the whole Psalm 27:4 issue. One thing I ask, one thing I seek, to dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life in order to, number one, contemplate the beauty of the Lord, and number two, inquire in His temple. Is that I'm fascinated by God. Is what Brother Lawrence did cleaning the floor, being so aware of God that the chief of the monks would come to him and say, "Dude, what's happening? Because you seem to be experiencing the living God way better than us, and all that you are doing is cleaning the kitchen." We need to get to the point of that awareness, and often whenever we get there and we start valuing the toilets that we are cleaning, the Lord comes and promotes us to the next step.
Yeah, I remember a time like that when I was actually still in seminary, where, I don't know if you guys remember this or not, or if it's still a thing or not, but there used to be a class where, I forget even what the class was, but one of the aspects was you had to do some kind of ministry volunteering outside of your normal context. And I remember going up to the teacher and I was like, what would be a good, ministry volunteering that is outside of my context? And he's like, well, what are you naturally good at? Do the opposite. And I was like, okay, well, I love working with people and teaching and engaging, all that kind of stuff. So maybe I need to do ministry where you're not around people, And so I ended up getting hooked up with this ministry in Portland that, I was working in a warehouse basically, and spent the entire volunteered time just binding books. And it was horrible. It was tedious. It was awful. And then I got to talking to this one guy who was a volunteer there, had been a volunteer there for like some 15 years or something like that, a really long time. And finally one day I was like, why do you volunteer here when the work is this tedious and this boring? And the guy goes, yeah, I used to think that way too when I first started. And he's like, and then I started realizing I have an opportunity to pray for every single person that will ever receive one of these books.
Wow.
And he goes, my heart attitude changed dramatically as a result of that. And he's like, and then I began to love it. And he's like, now I volunteer like every day, right? And he just prays for every person of every book every day. And I was like, that's awesome. Okay, I'm going to start doing that. So I started doing that with him. We actually started praying together for every book and every person who would ever receive any of these books. Wow. And dude, after just a little while of that, you were like so stoked to go and bind books.
Yeah.
Where you're like, before it was tedious and I hated this and this was awful. And now it's like, dude, this is awesome. Like, we're getting to be a part of what God is doing in the lives of all these random people that we'll probably never meet and probably never know the stories and probably never hear the testimonies, right?
That's it.
That's really cool.
That's it. Most of the time, it has nothing to do with the work itself. It's a heart issue. Most of the time, it's a heart issue. And then the Lord wants to deal with it because you think about it. So you're drinking this water right now.
Yeah.
Who made the plastic? Like think about it. The entire process.
Mm-hmm.
The trolley, and then you take to the factory, and whoever is doing the thing and shipping it, and the little lid, all of the water, whoever. And now we are drinking this, and it's great, and it's awesome, it's satisfying, and it's 81 degrees outside. Every little piece is sacred, no matter how boring it is. It is sacred work, and God does his, these boring little jobs, they are so important because it's almost like they are portals to really hear from the Lord. Because sometimes in the very exciting jobs, you barely have time to listen because we are going, 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 going. It's exciting. I think it's nice to every once in a while, you know, clean some toilets, mow the lawn a little bit extra, just to be there in the moment doing the tedious, so important, and sacred.
Yeah, I think it makes me think of the, if you haven't heard the poem I Pencil,
mm-mm.
Oh, yeah, it's basically like a pencil telling the story of how it was constructed and all the different pieces and where the wood came from, the rubber, the metal, and it
just
helps give you that more God level perspective, if you know what I mean, like looking at how things come together. You know, that's what Luther and Calvin did a great job talking about, how, you know, God in the Psalms, it frequently says God cares for his creatures, and you think about all the ways that God does care for his creatures. It's through the person cleaning the toilet. It's through the person packing that meat in the grocery store. Yep. It's through the person binding books in that boring job. But there's life to those jobs when you see it as there is something here that God is wanting to do, and I get to be just a small part, maybe, but I get to be a part of this. And you know, the book of Revelation says, the works will follow the saints. And I love that, because it's like nothing is overlooked that we do for the glory of God. And it's all part of the package of what it means to be a disciple, which is where we started. It's about living out our God-given calling in the little things and the big things, and seeing God in all of it. I wish we had more time. We got to wrap this up, but any final thoughts, just to leave our listeners encouraged? I think you've already encouraged them quite a bit, but just any final thoughts on this subject?
Yeah, I would say one thing. If you are listening to us right now, and there's something in you that's waking up, this reality of treating your work a little bit differently, or perhaps you are an entrepreneur, you are a business owner, and you already love your job, and you want to do more for the community, you don't know where to start. You want to do more for the church, you don't know where to start. Or perhaps you, in doing more for the church, you are like, you are realizing that your church doesn't have a marketplace ministry. By marketplace ministry, I don't mean a place where you gather the people that, like the richest people in the church, so it becomes a fundraiser. That's not what I'm saying at all. And I'm not dashing on that either. It's just not the concept I have in mind. But if you are trying to get to put together entrepreneurs, marketplace people, in order to minister to them, and in order to just have this pocket of thinkers, this little think tank within your church, all that you need to do is just connect with somebody else. Just find a business owner in your church. You know, you are a business owner, connect with another one. Go out for coffee. Don't do life alone. You never know, but like, for example, you guys, two friends, Matt, if I understood correctly, Matt at Wesley Seminary. Now you are on episode almost 300 of a podcast. That is fantastic. That's amazing. There's a study that says that the average human being will impact the life, at least in a little bit, in a small way, but will impact the life of 10,000 people within their lifetime, which is insane. Now, imagine you guys combined with a podcast that amplifies your voice. You better believe that it's going to be more than 20,000. You know what I'm saying? So if you're listening to me right now, if you're listening to us in this podcast, connect with somebody else. Just connect with one more person. You're struggling at work. Connect with somebody. The power of just having a brother in Christ. They don't need to be a pastor. A brother in Christ that you can walk with. You can go on a walk once a month even. Something incredible might start from that. Maybe your business will grow. Maybe you guys will partner in a very specific way for the city. Maybe together you will come to your pastor and propose an idea for how to enhance the marketplace ministry in your church, or how to start one if you don't have one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to hear past episodes, you can find them on our website at faithunpacked.com. We'd also invite you to subscribe on your favorite podcasting site. If you have any questions, feel free to hit us up on social media, or you can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com. And we invite you back next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.